Gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 151, Charming to the Last, coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and it's a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to our brand new website, www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. I am your host for this episode, 151. I am the Brant, and I am excited to be here with you. I gave it the title, Charming to the Last, which, of course, is the Governor Tarkin line. Kind of twofold there. First off, not sure where you're listening from, but in New England, we're still in school, and I'm a teacher, and doing the distance learning thing, and... It's a slow road to the end here in finishing up everything. I totally appreciate the situation we're in. I love teaching, so just take it as some tongue-in-cheek humor, nothing more than that. But it is time to stick a fork in the school season, the school year, and just move on till we can reconvene together or have a better strategy moving forward. Not that it was all failures and all negatives. That's not my point. Again, just some tongue-in-cheek humor there. The second thing is I want to talk briefly about conventions, and I guess namely online conventions, and I kind of feel the same way for that. Like, I want to do it because I want to be part of the community, but it's just, like, not the thing I want to do. I like going and seeing people and talking to people and playing games and picking up games for review and meeting new people and seeing the people I only see every so often and sitting in front of a computer screen and playing with people is not necessarily where I'm going, so it's charming to the last minute of those conventions. But we'll see how it goes. It's new territory, so hopefully it'll help us to grow. And I know there's people who love playing stuff online. It's much easier for them, so I would never want to take that away. Awesome. Yeah, that's basically what's going on. I know the episodes are a little more slow going here. I am going to follow this one up with a Best of May 2020. I guess I'm kind of following in Rotto's footsteps there. I'll give him the credit, although I also love the Brothers Murph do the same thing, and I realize, wow, this is something I love when people talk about just their month of gaming and kind of rank everything. And the rank is not important. I think I did this for April, and I failed miserably. Like, I ranked 31 games, but actually had 35 and then had to insert here and here and here. Whatever. It's really talking about the games and giving you a rough idea. Also, a pile of reviews, but I'm trying to get other voices with me on the podcast, so I want to do Tang Garden and review that with Kathy, as well as do Sky Tear and review that with Larry, and I want to review Aeons and Legacy with hopefully Kathy and Brian and maybe Rachel. We'll see. We're a couple games away from finishing that, so those are things you can kind of look forward to coming up. So, jump in here, probably a little bit of a shorter episode with just me. You know, I try to talk for about 30 minutes straight, and then I get tired and finish it out. So, but it's always fun. I love talking. I love talking about games. And now that I'm sitting down to do it, I'm so happy because it's been like 2.5 weeks since I recorded. So, that's what's happening. So, yeah, there's a couple things coming up in upcoming episodes. As far as the Portal front, just quick update there. So, the Portal is open. It is available for retail with masks and all that if you're in the area. There is no gaming yet. We're still just trying to find that time when it makes sense. Technically, in Connecticut, you can have people sit down as of next week after you hear this, but I don't think we're quite there and ready yet, feeling comfortable with people coming from multiple houses and just kind of sitting and hanging with each other. So we'll kind of keep you posted on that. Facebook is a great place for that. You probably see the most updates, and obviously our webpage as well. So there's that. The podcast probably will be the one to follow up on all that information for you. But if you haven't been down, it's really nice. Obviously, you know, if you're immunocompromised or whatever, you know, we're not asking you to risk anything. But, you know, come in, stop on by. We've got a clearance section. We've redone the whole store, miniature section. We have, you know, obviously all the GW stuff is out front, and then we have like a miniatures like you, and in there are miniatures board games. So you're going to find your TI4, your Blood Rage, your Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea, you know, along with Legion and Game of Thrones and all those miniatures games. So I think it's a really nice way of doing it. And coming soon is a used game section that we're kind of working on, and I think that will be really exciting too. So we'll have the clearance, we'll have the used games. We'll have obviously all your favorites, and new releases have their own rack as well. So there's plenty to find, plenty of gaming, and whatnot happening. All right, as we do, let's jump into reviews. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, my goodness. All right, we'll see how many I can get through here in terms of all that before I get tired. All right, first one is Liberation of Reetberg. This is from Cosmos. They were nice to send this over to us, and I got a chance to play this actually several times. And this is an interesting game because I read the rules, and I was like, okay, this is a light little co-op game. This will be fun once. It'll be simple. And I played it that first time, and I was like, oh, that was actually kind of fun, and the characters were different from what I thought. And then as I played more and more, I was like, this is actually a pretty fun game. I like this game a lot. So what's happening in Liberation of Reetberg? So it's a Legend of Andor game, which is a very popular co-op that they have. And in this, you all pick a character. I think there's five. Ooh, I can't remember if there's five or six characters. I apologize. And basically, they all just have a three-card deck and then something unique, or a three-card hand. And you're trying to solve four of six tasks. So you're defending a castle, the Reetberg, Castle of Reetberg, and there are six tasks face down at six different locations. And you can travel from any location to any other location. And then there's a bunch of encounter cards that get placed either face down or face up by like a story deck. So you kind of preset all those, and you're trying to empty all those cards by either defeating them or doing the encounters or acquiring the items, whatever it may be. And once you clear that, then you get to flip that task card and see if you can complete it. And there's all sorts of various things you're trying to do, have a certain number of defeated enemies and have other tasks completed and pay gold and all sorts of things. So what you're doing on your turn is you just take one of your cards and you play it face down, and they basically have three actions. So it might be fight an enemy there, it might be move, it might be flip another encounter card. And then each character has, like, some bonus. So some of them gain, it's like little green tokens that give them strength or willpower. So some of them can do that. Some of them can flip two cards, or some of them can move and then fight. One of the characters has four cards instead of three. Another has, like, a summon, and she summons an enemy that will either help friends or help herself in terms of increasing strength total. And they have different ways that they kind of fight, but they're really simple, like, oh, you just fight for this amount. And when you fight an enemy, they have five strength. If you have five strength, you win. And then when you defeat an enemy, you kind of stick them aside in this trophy area, and you get a bonus. It might be gold coins that you can spend to do various effects. It might be items, or sometimes you get to draw another card, which is like an ally, and you draw from the ally deck, and now you have a fourth or a fifth card in your hand, and you go through. Eventually, you're going to run out of cards, so you need to pick them all up. In terms of all that. And so when you pick all your cards up, you flip a new story card, and that puts more encounter cards out. They do a really nice thing in balancing easy and hard difficulty, and that easy kind of triggers the top of the card, and hard triggers the top and the bottom. So it can get pretty frustrating on hard with all that stuff coming out and trying to eliminate the castle. So where's the fun in the game? Where is all that happening in terms of that? It's really those characters. They feel surprisingly unique. I literally thought it was just going to be like, oh, everybody can fight, everybody can move, everybody can flip encounter cards. But it's not. That combo of, like, move and flip, because some of the encounter cards are, you know, weapons or items. And so you move somewhere, you flip it, boom, it's yours immediately. Or you can move and trigger a battle, and other people can fight with you if they play a card. One of them has, like, bow and arrow, and you draw, like, an arrow, and you see how much damage it is, and you have it. You save those, and then you know how much damage you have. Others can, like, combine, like, the spellcaster can combine two spells to get their strength, or part of their casting spells are, like, after I fight, now I can move. So it's pretty interesting. It is still in the super light category. I mean, think Forbidden Island. That's where you're going. Even, you know, simpler than Pandemic. In terms of what you're trying to do and putting all that together and how to figure out what to do. And there is definitely some random elements as to what cards will come out and where they'll come out and how those story cards are going to reseed things. But all in all, I think the game says 40 minutes, and the first time maybe teaching and playing was 40 minutes, but it's been 30. Played with kids, played with adults. It's a pretty solid little game. I mean, I don't know that it will last forever, but it's not one that I was like, oh, this is fun. I reviewed it. Let's get it in the store library. It's like, I'm going to keep this around my house a little bit and see how this plays. So You know, if you need a light co-op, definitely family style, or, you know, you're at an event and somebody's like, hey, you want to try this out? It'll take 30 minutes. It really is not very long. Again, maybe at an event, take you 45. But it was pretty fun, and I was surprised how much changing characters made me feel like I was doing more. Just really simple with three cards, they felt relatively unique. Now, no asymmetry compared to a Gaia project or a Root or something like that where it's just so unique. But it was enough that I was like, eh, I played one, I've played them all. Not true. So that is Liberation of Reaper. Next up, Exit Stormy Light. So I had just played a ton of these Exit games. They're really, really good. They start to get a little samey for me, but in terms of like a recommend, this was another great one. There was one puzzle that I would say was like, whoa, and we couldn't get it to work, and we had to look up the clues, and what they were asking us to do was tricky. But other than that, really good puzzles. Got to play with Zephra. She enjoyed it at 10 years old. She was able to solve half the puzzles. We only maybe got stuck on one or two, which was fine. We were able to get them and figure out where we're going. And then, like I said, that one was a little frustrating. But I am not averse to looking at the clue cards. So once we realize, like, we just can't figure this out, we look at the clue cards. They kind of help us, and we're able to make our way through in terms of all that. So again, another solid Exit game. As I've always said, I think Exit is the better of the games. Unlock is kind of the more innovative of the games. So if you really just want puzzles like an Exit Room, Exit, and like an escape room, Exit is where it's at. If you're looking for some innovation, Unlock is where it's at, some of the others. And there's more of them than that, I realize. But I really enjoy both. I like playing them. Am I getting sour on them? No. Am I seeking them out? No. So that's kind of where I'm at this point. It's like, I will play them. Cosmos sent us another one. Ooh, Mississippi Queen, I want to say. And I think that's like a murder mystery rolling down a river. Rolling. So get a chance to play that as well. But that is Exit Stormy Flight from Cosmos. All right, next up is High Rise from Formal Ferret Games. So we got this in Kickstarter at the store. And so this is a really neat game. Formal Ferret previously did The Networks and Wordzee are two of their big games. They're Gilhova designed High Rise as well. And so what's happening in High Rise? So you're trying to build the tallest skyscrapers in a city. It's kind of more of a generic city, but it's got that cool mechanism like Patchwork or those others where you're going along like that time track and you pick an action. It's a little more creative because there's kind of these like pockets or sections of the city. So I can pick one of these three actions. Sorry, let me slow down. So you're trying to build those, score points for the height that you build, and you're going to play a certain number of rounds. So the basic game is play two rounds and the advanced game is play three rounds. In the two-round game, you kind of start with a setup, so you have some buildings out. I also played the solo mode, which is even more unique from there, so we'll run through those. So the basic mechanism is that action track, and whoever's behind goes next. Catch up to where I was before. So now you have like a section where you kind of have like three or four choices. So you pick one of those, wherever it is. Excuse me. Then if you're behind, you can go again. But you have to move to the next section. So you can't just kind of move one space at a time. You move one section at a time. And that's really clever in that it doesn't give you too much of an advantage. And then it's encouraging you to move on because there's like bonuses you get. What are you doing? Essentially, you're gathering material types like floors, and they're in various colors. And then it's telling you, oh, to build this height skyscraper this round, which are decades, the 2010s, 20s, and 30s, you need such and such colored floors, and you need this plastisteel, I want to say. It's like a green thing that can also be a wild. And then there's various ways. So if I discard four of those, I'm going to build a height four. But if I have like the matching plastisteel, that'll give me an extra one. And if I'm the first to build, that'll get an extra. And you're building these towers in the sections of the city that will then be associated with action. So if people land on those spaces, you get to draw more places. There's corruption that you can gain from various actions, and you're trying to kind of, you're going to lose points in the game for where you are on the corruption track, and if you're behind, you'll get bonuses. So you're kind of weighing all that out, playing through the rounds. It's super clever, super fun, super exciting. Your oh goodness, this is a great, solid game. I don't know that it's amazing, but it's extremely solid. It's very well balanced. It's very well thought out. The solo mode is very hard and very well thought out, where you're actually controlling your own marker plus two neutral mogul markers, and trying to figure out what you want to do with all of them, and how you're going to move them and gain corruption or not. It's a really, really good game that I definitely want to get to the table again. So far, I would say it's on my top 10 of 2020. I anticipate that it's kind of on that low end and it'll bounce just out of that. But a really, really good game from Forbal Ferret and Gil Hova. So definitely, if you're into Euros, check this one out. I would say it takes about an hour to get around. The solo mode, you go around three times, and it took me about an hour and a half. In, like, two-player, it seems to be, like, just under an hour to do a round. So when you play, you already have one set up, and then you play two rounds, you're looking at just under a two-hour game with two players. So you're probably getting to around 2 hours with three and four. And then if you add that other one, you're going to push, you know, up towards the 3 hours for length. So it's going to be a pretty long, you know, heavy strategy game on that front. But, yeah, really solid. So that's High Rise from Forbal Ferret. Next up, Dungeon Alliance from Quixotic Games. So Dungeon Alliance, I've got a chance to play two-player and to play the solo a whole bunch. And Dungeon Alliance came out a little while ago, and then did a Kickstarter reprint. And Andrew Parks at Quixotic and the designer of this game was really nice to send me one over just recently so I could review this. So Dungeon Alliance, basically it's a deck builder dungeon crawl. So you draft four heroes. They have various abilities, you know, health, and gives you three cards. You got a 12-card deck. You draw six cards on your turn, and then you move your hero. So you play a card, and this one will have movement, and you know, they've got, or they have movement values they can use, and you play a card to add to that, or a card to attack, or they have their basic attack, and you're pulling out rooms that you could see, and you're going to see the enemy. So you're drafting tiles that are going to be the next room as you move from room to room and fight the enemies. So it's pretty much always perfect information. You know what's going to happen. The attacking is the same way. All right, to eliminate a monster, they have 2 armor, 5 health. I need to do 7 damage. They will sustain hits, so if I do 4 damage, they'll take 2 and hold it. And then after everybody goes with one of their heroes, everybody activates a monster, so you fight each other, and it's, again, perfect information on that. What are you trying to do? You're trying to get XP for eliminating monsters to level up. Then you can use that XP to draft new cards into your deck and be able to continue moving forward. And eventually you can unlock in, like, advanced mode. You get quests where you defeat big enemies and things like this. And so you're scoring all sorts of points for different things. And that's basically the idea of what you're doing to get those points to score at the end. So it's really a Euro game. So it's akin to Gloomhaven. I'd be careful to compare those two. But it gives you that idea of you're using cards to manage how you're going to move about a dungeon, to attack enemies where you have mostly perfect information, although Gloomhaven doesn't, because you don't know what you're your allies are going to do, and you don't know what the enemies are going to do exactly in that. This one you have a better idea. So the multiplayer, you can play co-op, but I played with Verse, so it was competitive. And I actually didn't get all the way through that game, because it's a little bit on the longer end in terms of that. And then the solo mode, you are trying to either get a certain number of points and see where you get to, which I played once, almost to completion, same way again. And then the second time I played with the quest, where you're trying to complete whatever level you choose, 1, 2, or 3 of them. I tried to complete all three and didn't make it, but it was interesting. So you get a certain number of rounds. As you draft cards, you increase the number that you can discard and draw back up to, so you can get your hand up to 8. So this game is really, really good. It's got 2 flaws in my mind. So the first one is that those characters, they do have unique stat lines, but they don't have special powers. And this is a place where I would be perfectly fine with really simple special powers. This character gets +1 against all 3 and 4 XP enemies. This one gets +1 movement, you know, or opening doors is free. This one gets 1 free attempt to disarm traps. Whatever it would be, just really, really simple one-line powers that wouldn't be heavily distinguishing them in a lot of games, but in this game it would. So I would love to see that. They do have the unique cards, so it's there in terms of that. The other thing that I wish the game had, the other thing that's just tough is getting through the first round. The first round, you have these cards. Each hero has three. You draw six. You look at your hand. It's like, well, this is a hero that I have two of their three cards, so let me go with them. Kind of discard down. You draw up. And maybe once in that round, you'll have three cards. And you're drafting new cards, which is great. When you get to that second round, the second time with the characters, it's awesome. Usually you have seven cards in your hand. You're able to manipulate your cards a little bit more, and now you've got generic cards that you've drafted that you can use for those heroes. So suddenly you go from the first round where you had two to the second round where you have five, and you might have two different choices. Ooh, I could use five cards for either of these heroes, and you're really making decisions at that point. It's not bad, but it's just tricky when you're trying to get people up and running, and it's not very interesting in the first round, and people are like, huh, is this all this is? And they don't see it till the second round, which takes a little while. Because it's got a pretty big learning curve. I want to say think Mage Knight, but it's not that big in terms of what you're doing. But there's just it feels like there's a lot of decisions to be made. But in that beginning, it doesn't quite get there. So I try to get through that. So those are kind of my two big issues with the game that I wish were a little bit different. I do also have the Champions expansion, which adds some more things you can fight, some more heroes, and adds some more ways to get treasures, which was kind of interesting. So I mentioned that, but really, it doesn't feel like an expansion as much as more like an add-on, where you can just throw these things in the game the second time you play, and it's a no-brainer. They're all in my box now. But what does it do well? Well, first off, that whole dungeon crawl with perfect information is just awesome. And like I said, once you get to the second, third, fourth rounds of the game, like, you are just making some great decisions. It's exciting. The dungeon gets a little tight in solo play. It makes you kind of want to spread out. It's really clever in that the tiles have doors on them, but not everywhere. So if you line a door with a wall, it becomes a locked door. So there's a mechanism to unlock the door, but it doesn't block you. And if you align two walls, there's a secret door, which has another mechanism. So that was great. Similarly, the quest that you're trying to complete, you can put experience on the quest to get by them. So I played one in mine where it was like, go and explore three blue rooms. But blue rooms didn't come up because they get discarded in the solo mode. And I couldn't do that, but I was able to put XP and get by it. So the ability to modify that is really well done. In addition, every turn, you can take two cards, put them face down under a hero, and they now get plus one attack, plus one, move. They can heal a wound, and they can play multiple types of one card. So, like, you have maneuver cards, and you're only allowed to play one maneuver, but if you do that ability, now you can play multiple maneuvers. It's a great way to move past cards you don't want. So like early in the game, I drafted a healing card, but I didn't need a lot of healing. So I throw that card face down. It's going to stay there till the end of the round. So I don't have to worry as I draw through my deck, that card coming up again, and then it will go back into my deck. That is great mitigation. So really, really fun. So I really had a lot of fun with this co-op. I think it might be my preferred way to play the game. Like solo was pretty fun. I like working with somebody else, so I think co-op is what I want to try next, and I did the competitive, which was fine, but it's just two people running through a dungeon on opposite sides and not really talking other than the mechanics of the game, and I think I'd rather work together, which again, for me, is similar to Mage Knight. I like that a lot better, working together, so there's that element. So Dungeon Alliance has got a lot of great things going for it. A couple flaws that I wish were there. I think that the startup is tough, but you can get through it. I really feel like the lack of abilities on the characters makes them a little uninteresting. They do have different stats and different cards, but not quite. I would like them to have some generic thing on them, some differentiating feature or ability on them, which would be really neat. But overall, really excited with Dungeon Alliance. I'm going to keep it around and try the two-player co-op, like I said. Awesome. Dungeon Alliance, Quixotic Games. A quick update, because I talk about it all the time, but I did get Marvel Black Widow to the table, and she was really neat. Obviously, Black Widow is my favorite game of all time, so I won't harp on it too long, but this is from Fantasy Flight Games, and I really want to talk about it because Black Widow did something I didn't expect her to do, and she plays these preparation cards, and I thought it was just a name. Like, oh, these are preparation cards, and she triggers all these things with preparation cards. So they just created a set of cards that go to Black Widow. But no, they're cool. You play these cards on her turn, but they all trigger their effects on the enemy's turn. So she doesn't do much on her turn, But boy, howdy, is she powerful. She is a classic control deck. And she does all her control elements on the villain's turn. And it's pretty fun. She's a little tough to solo. You can get through it, but she's very slow about doing damage and other things. But wow, would she be amazing with in like a 3 and 4 player game, using all those effects and things and controlling things. So I haven't got a chance to do that. Obviously, playing with that many people yet. But, yeah, she was really interesting. If you're in on Marvel Champions, I assume you're in. If you're out, I assume you're out. So it's always a funny thing to review a pack. But, you know, if you're just kind of like, oh, I forgot about Marvel Champions. And, oh, that finally came out because she was delayed 2 months, I want to say. And now she's out. So that's Marvel Champions. Next up, I'm going to review Animal Kingdoms. And I feel bad because I forgot to write down the publisher of Animal Kingdoms. But this is a really neat family game. I got turned on to this game from the Family Gamers podcast. Andrew and Anitra told me about it. And I picked up a copy and it was really fun. It's a light family area control game where you've got a set of cards. You're trying to score points over 3 rounds. And you're playing these animal cards. And they have a rank, 1 through 8. And they have a different type of animal. I want to say there's 8 different animals. And some fun animals, too. Not just kind of your standard, you know, farm or zoo animals. So what do? You got 5 different sections on the board. On your turn, you play a card to a section. Play a card down, and that's going to... it needs to satisfy some category. So it's going to say, rank these cards 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Or the cards you play here can't be the same as the neighboring regions. And you get to put a cube in that region, and you keep going. Eventually what you're going to need to do is complete a region, and when you complete a region, you're out. You can't play any more cards that round. So you're trying to get as many of your cubes so you can have area control, and then at the end of the round, you know how much each section will score. You play random score tiles to each region. So this one's worth 6, but this one's worth 8, so I'm going to the 8. I want to try to get that one. If you're the last player to put a cube in a region, you'll also push that cube up, and when we clear everything at the end of the round, you will have 1 cube already in that region. So sometimes that can be important. Second place scores 3 points, third place scores 1 point. So definitely scoring first a whole bunch. And if you are tied for number of cubes, there's like a little competition, and you flip a card. You always have 4 cards in your hand, so you're drawing back up off the deck. You do that through 3 rounds where the points are going to increase. And there's a couple things, like you get points for going out first, and that's mostly it. Really light, really simple, but really fun. We had a lot of fun playing this. Kathy Zephyr and I played it twice. I played it a few times with other people. And, yeah, works really well. I don't imagine it's great at 2, but I think it plays 3, 4, or 5. And that would work really well. Awesome. And then last up for this episode is Unfair. So this is a game that I was told is really, really good from my friend Evan, who I believe also listens to the podcast. And I meet up with him at a lot of conventions. Actually, he came to Connecticut one time, as well as he's from Connecticut originally, or partially, or sometimes. Anyway, so he had told me about this game, Unfair, which came out a few years ago. And it's from Good Games Publishing, which I think used to be Horrible Games, and then Horrible Guild, and then Good Game, but I'm not sure. But it's Good Games Publishing. And what happens in Unfair? So Unfair is a card game engine builder. But it has a lot of take that elements. You're building an amusement park, but there are ways to mess with your opponent's amusement park. So I was a little nervous about the mess with, because I could generally deal with it, and I don't mind mess with. It's tough in a straight, like, engine build Euro game, but the people I play with tend to really not like the take that elements, and it can get overwhelming. So basically what you're doing in this game is you're going to... So you've got ninjas and pirates and gangsters and what else? You've got jungle and I can't remember them all off the top of my head. And you take a number of decks equal to the number of players and you shuffle them all together. And it's really neat because the deck, those sets have everything you need. They have the park cards, they have the event cards, they have the blueprint cards, they have player cards in them. It's all right there, and showcase cards. You're going to play a series of rounds, 6 in the starter game, 8 in the normal game. And basically, you're all going to draw an event, then you have a chance to play events. And the events are really positive and somewhat negative. They're significantly negative, but the part that's really nice is usually the positive is really good. So you're kind of like, oh, maybe I don't want to take that my opponent because the positive is like, oh, gain 5 coins. That would be really helpful to me this round. Versus like, oh, I could discard one of your cards or take one of your cards, but that's not necessarily what I want to do. So you're trying to build attractions and then upgrade your attractions. Put air conditioning, quality seating, all sorts of various things. Put restrooms and snack facilities and all sorts of different things on your ride. So you're kind of going from the carnival to the theme park as you're building it. And then you'll take 3 actions on a turn. There's a way to earn a 4th. And you're going to play those cards. You can play from your hand. You can play from the face-up area, kind of think Everdell. Or you can kind of draw new event cards or blueprint cards, which think of like tickets and Ticket to Ride. Oh, complete this, otherwise lose points. Gain points if you complete this, otherwise lose points. So that's essentially what you're doing. You also get 2 showcase cards, which are these really big mega thrill rides that will give you like a once per turn ability that's really powerful or a once per game ability that's really powerful. So you got lots of great choices there. And then kind of at the end, you're going to assess how many stars you have, which is how exciting your park is, which is how many coins you'll earn for people coming to your park. So you're using those coins to generate your engine, but they are not necessarily your points at the end of the game. You're going to get points for how many upgrades you have. So you're looking for little symbols on your things, on your tableau. So you want to make that as far as you can. And then there's a big old chart getting anywhere from 1 symbol to 25 symbols and how many points you get. Coins also score you a whole bunch of points because every 2 coins is a point, so you also want to be getting coins and doing that. It's really good game. It's really fun. The Take That is definitely heavy-handed if you want it to be. So I played a 3-player game, and 1 player was losing, so all they did was draw event cards at the end of the game and then just drop like 5 events and discard 3 of my items, upgrades, and it was rough, but it was still playable. It was still fun. When I played a 2-player game, we basically didn't do any negative events. However, there was 1 at the end of the game that was like, I'm going to discard your guest services thing because that's what I can do. And they discarded, and all of a sudden my blueprint went from scoring me 22 points to losing me 10 points. And I was like, oh no. Luckily, through some card play, I was able to get that card back, and it didn't cost me those points, but it was basically my whole turn trying to get that back. There are positive funfair events that happen for the first 4 rounds and then negative unfair events that happen. However, in the rule book, in the game itself, it comes with these extra cards that tell you other ways to play, like drafting blueprints, starting with showcases. One of them is called World Peace, where you negate all of the negative elements. Now, I don't mind necessarily house ruling something like that, but people I play with tend to be like, well, does the designer approve of that? And by putting that card in the game, they're saying, we approve of this variant. And so I was able to play that with Kathy, and we played the World Peace variant, and we also played with all positive funfair events, and wow, it was a great engine builder. I mean, that's really what I'm looking to do. So think Terraforming Mars on the engine build. Terraforming Mars has some Take That elements, and they can be brutal, but they're usually not too bad. This one, they're a little bit more brutal, a little bit more harsh. Now, the title of the game is Unfair, so don't miss it. They're trying to tell you it's there. But I think a lot of people I play with really like that engine build aspect and don't really want to Take That, and it was cool that that World Peace card was in there. I have since acquired the expansion, so I'm going to now play with the expansion, which has aliens, Western, B-movies, and dinosaurs. They also tell you, like, there's a cover card that tells you, like, this is how unfair this one is. This is how focused on building attractions. This is, like, all these different elements. So you kind of have that. I do wish there were a few more, like, so you could play a 4-player game with really low interaction. But it's close, and I'm sure with 1 more expansion in the works, you'll have it. You'll have a bunch of 1-level, you know, not expansion. But even still through all the Take That, people have been talking about wanting to play this game again and talking to me about the game. So it's a really good game. Good job, Evan. Good recommend. We really enjoy this one. The other one, Railroad Revolution, that you mentioned to me, which I think I got a chance to review. Actually, I don't think I did. I'm waiting for that expansion, Railroad Evolution, to come over, which I know can be ordered from Portugal right now, but I'm going to wait till it comes to the North American market. Hopefully it will. And then I'll get a chance to review that with its expansion. But that was another one he recommended to me. So, anyway, that's Unfair from Good Games. Really, really good game. Realize the title, Unfair. fair. There's some significant take that in the game, but you can, the designer says, play it peacefully. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. All right, that is the reviews. The other one I was going to talk about is Marvel Verse, but I think I'm going to skip it because I don't think it's the most important one to get down because we're playing that a whole bunch, but we'll move on. So I just quickly wanted to take a minute to talk about conventions being canceled and online conventions. I know this has been a lot of talk on this, but yeah, I'm not really sure. I don't know that an online convention, as I was saying before, is really the thing that I'm looking to do. But I realize that's a lot of people, and it's just a chance to get to play games. Now, I am excited to try to demo some stuff. I don't really have a laptop that runs Tabletopia or Tabletop Simulator, because Kathy has a work laptop. I then have a work laptop, but it's for school, so I can't load anything on it. But I did find out that Tabletopia is a browser. So I was excited about that, and I'm excited for the prospect that maybe somebody could be teaching me a game and how to use that software. Kind of simultaneously. There's a lot of other opportunities. I've been playing Marvel Champions a bit with Roy Cannaday via Zoom. So that gives an option there, I realize, for doing that. So I might run something like that for the virtual con for BGG and Dice Tower. I'm excited for the Portal Con, where it's going to be a lot of presentations, a lot of chance to kind of like win their games and do all that stuff. So I thought that was creative of Ignacy in terms of all that. At this point, Origins Online has been canceled, and, you know, definitely Portal Game Podcast, we stand behind that. Black Lives Matter is certainly a mantra for us, and everybody should have a seat at the table, so we understand that why the, you know, the people of color backed out on doing that event, so that won't happen anymore, so we don't have kind of that case there. I didn't see a lot from BGGCon, the spring BGGCon line, in terms of that. But again, it was a lot of coverage of games. So I totally appreciate people doing that. It'll be interesting to see what Gen Con does and what Essen does, because those are so big. And how will games be available in terms of all that and delays. So I don't know. I don't know what people's feelings are. I'm going to try to jump on. Like I said, I've got a ticket for that virtual BGG Dice Tower Con. And I'm going to see what I can do creatively. And what can happen. I've actually enjoyed my friends the most just kind of doing some, like, picture puzzle type things. You know, guess the character from the color palette and, you know, figure out, put these movie scenes in order. Those things have been kind of more fun to me, you know, almost more as activities than games, more than trying to play stuff. Codenames works pretty well online. Mysterium worked pretty well for us. And Just One works well, but a lot of other things just feel frustrating to me. The whole camera setup and all that. So, been interesting. But I would like to participate. There's people doing things. Hopefully get a chance to play some games that I haven't had a chance to play and get an eye on those. And especially, like I said, from the publishers trying to demo some of the games with them. This could be a good slot because you just know, rather than walking up to a table at a convention, hey, I'm just going to play this game. But honestly, I'm a rule book person and I'm a teacher. So if you give me a game and you give me the rule book and you sit me down at a table, I'm perfectly happy to sit there and read the rule book and teach everybody, knowing I'll get things wrong. But that's where that works. But like I said, it's kind of seeing people. Gen Con is probably the least of that. It's the one where I go with Brian and Larry and we see people from Connecticut and we're really trying to get games played. So Dice Tower Con is the one where I kind of went to hang out. PAX Unplugged, love going, hanging out, having Kathy with me. Is really nice because that's the convention she goes to in terms of all that. But yeah, what are your thoughts? What are you thinking about that? You can email me at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. You can go onto our Portal community page on Facebook and kind of let me know what you thought there. Realize that the podcast is also now hosted on the webpage. So you can go to the webpage to find the podcast episodes if you're trying to point people to that. We're obviously in Spotify and Google Play and iTunes as well. Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, in terms of all that, you can find us there, but all those. So, yeah, this is kind of my brief thoughts on online conventions. They're not really super exciting to me, and sitting in sweltering heat in my house that doesn't have AC in the summer on a computer is not really my main motivation, but maybe some of the panels and things I get a chance to watch. I've got YouTube on my TV, so I kind of like putting some of those things on, so I might participate in that. Again, I realize it's not optimal. I am a school teacher. What we had to do for 3 months was not optimal either, but it's what we had to do. So, there's all that. Awesome. with that, with 7 reviews and a little talk about online conventions, I will wrap up episode 151 of the Portal Gaming Podcast. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I am your host, The Brant. And until next time, I hope you step